You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, August 1st, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's casual Friday, folks. It's August. So casual. I'm wearing a tank top and nothing else. On the program today, Cliff Schechter will be joining us, and to ostensibly give me a movie recommendation that I can stream. And I'm starting to collect them now because we will be going on vacation sometime in August. The wonderful best-selling author, Isabel Gillies. Also on the program today, Ebola. Coming to a town or city near you? Unlikely, but who knows? Also on the program, are they finally ready to vote on a horribly draconian bill to send child refugees back without a hearing? Can they finally get their act together? Yes, the heartwarming story of John Bonaire and his wayward Republican caucus. We're not going to impeach. I have no control over these people. Also on the program today, more trouble for Cuomo. More happiness for Sam. And how many times can the heads of our national security state lie and spy lie to and spy on Congress and still keep their jobs? We have a running tally. We'll get to that later in the
program. Wait. So the thing was did we spy on the Senate? Oh, I didn't know, because I thought, okay, I thought you were actually referring to something. We did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, more on that executive order by President Obama to help out federal workers. Ladies and gentlemen, this show relies on your membership. Become a member today at majority.fm. You will get the most naive presentation of... I was called naive by a listener who refuses to support this program. That's fine. He did. It was weird, though. It was about he actually defined naive to me, and it was about a guy who had a warm, naive smile. But
sounds a little suspect to me.
Oh yes,
Dick Morris here. This is a one of a kind program.
Dick Morris has a new. This is the way on Friday. It's casual Friday, folks. You know, the fun half of the week spills over.
The way you've been covering Gaza is just truly exemplary. The whole Majority Report crew, and let me tell you something.
You're not doing it right. We've been working on our. We figured out that Dick Morris is Harvey Fierstein, but only if he was like very constipated. So it's a little bit higher. It's more like, I'm convinced that President Obama will probably resign, and I will protect your finances. My new retirement protection program.
And after those frauds go through, I'm going to become a Sam Steeder. Such an excellent show.
Yes, we've also discovered that Dick Morris is in fact a left-wing plant.
Yes.
Who's really just punishing right-wingers.
It's sort of the inverse of right-wing Mandela.
That's right. Yeah, that's basically the way we do it. We have our...
we go, you want
in our comedy,
and then it becomes the opposite, and therefore comedy arises, okay? It's a simple equation. Use it in your own
life.
The
political comedy annex course that we take, they basically just have one move, and we just keep using it over and over again. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is casual Friday around this office. In August, Fridays couldn't get more casual, unless, of course, we added Cliff Schechter and the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
The timeless, timeless Cliff Schechter theme song. Cliff, how
yes,
are you,
sir.
Buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Quite a week. Of course, we have another ceasefire that lasted for about 3 hours. This one was...
Yes. That was only 69 hours short of how long it was supposed to go,
right.
I believe.
This one apparently violated by Hamas. Hamas claims that Israel has broken the truce, but, you know, we... tough to know right at the moment as to who was responsible, but certainly
at this moment I feel pretty safe. Well, I feel pretty safe in just blaming Ted Cruz at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, we certainly talked about Israel quite a bit this week on the program, so let's go to something equally, or not, I don't know that equally, but certainly could be equally as disturbing, is Ebola. We haven't mentioned this at all on the program this week, but we have the world's worst known outbreak of Ebola virus in West African nations. And you wanted to talk about this because you were like, you know, you didn't think that we were doing enough, really, in this regard, in terms of national policy. Do tell.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about it because I think it's important, you know, what it says about us. I think it's very easy for people to see, you know, for us to have, to be told again and again about how bridges and roads are getting dangerously decrepit or falling apart. But it doesn't have that visceral, you know, impact that Ebola has, and people dying. And the reason I bring that up is just because, you know, and I bring up roads and bridges as only one of many parts of our infrastructure, or the role that we believe government should play, which is actually protecting its people. And you know, it's Ebola, it's other diseases too, but basically there are a number of articles that have come out and have just said, and this reminds me of sort of unreinforced, if that's a word, levees and Katrina, being warned about that for years, being warned about Homeland Security for years and doing nothing. And in this particular case, you know, we've been warned again and again, and we even had the incident of one of the Americans who died over there, got on a plane. Sometimes it takes 8 to 10 days for these symptoms to show, and you're contagious, and it's easily caught through any bodily fluid, including saliva. And so the gentleman, sadly, who died, you know, got on an airplane from Liberia and ended up in Lagos, Nigeria, and died in the airport. Now, it seems at this point nobody else was infected there, but he was on his way to Minnesota. He, a few days later, was going to fly to Minneapolis to see his kids, for his daughters, which is obviously another kind of tragedy, for one of their birthday parties, and his wife. And I don't know how many people were going to be there, but perhaps enough that, you know, who knows? So you'd think, you know, in knowing that, we'd be doing something. And then I read this article, or a couple articles, one of them was in the Daily Mail, but in a few other places, that basically why, you know, it's looking like it's going to take 2 to 6 years to have a vaccine. Why is that? Because there's no market for it. Because, of course, as we know, the market has taken over our lives. And we don't just do things because the government realizes that something could be a threat or a danger and they should protect us. We only do things now if there's a good market for it and pharma can make a lot of money. And obviously Ebola outbreaks are, you know, only happen here and there, and it's usually among the poorest communities. So they're not interested. And that's exactly the kind of role in our society that we've reserved for government to step in and do something. And if they've already doing tests on animals that have shown some success, but they need to
human trials.
They need human trials. They need to speed it up. But guess what they don't have the money for? Human trials. So we're not doing it right now. And now, that's why I wanted to talk about it. Yeah. I mean, it's a terrible tragedy, obviously, for everyone in Africa. It is a horrible way to die. Everyone who's passed away over there, you know, my condolences, and you know, so I'm not trying to belittle that. I don't care what happened in Africa. I'm just saying I think there's a broader issue here.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think healthcare, particularly the development of different drugs and of different healthcare technologies. And I remember having a conversation with someone who was developing, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was they were developing, but they were going around, and they were VCs, and they said, you know, we've come across some amazing technologies, we just couldn't figure out how to profit off it, and these things languish. And this is a perfect example. This sector is a perfect example of how the market does not solve these problems. And particularly,
right.
You know, now by all accounts that I can read, because of we have things like running water, you know,
right.
And we have a much greater ability to deal with a virus like Ebola, that it's not necessarily a huge threat in this country per se. But with that said, though, the NIH has been working with the FDA to put the vaccines that they have through these trials, like you say. But, you know, people forget the sequester, which drastically defunded NIH, was not reversed. And so you have this absence of government spending here because, you know, as it stands now, we haven't had that massive outbreak that is going to spread through tens of thousands of people. But it's not impossible to imagine. We're talking about, cases, the Ebola that has double, this outbreak is double the first outbreak, or the last outbreak, I should say. And this is a disease or a virus, I should say, that we've only been aware of for about 30 years.
That's
and
right.
And as there's more development in West Africa, you're going to start to see this virus travel more and more as more people move to the cities.
I don't mean to cut you off, but it had never made it in the past to an urban center before.
Yes.
And now it made its way to Freetown, where there are a million people, and made its way to Lagos. I haven't even looked at the population. I think there's probably a couple million people in Lagos, maybe more. And so, you know, and we're talking about major hubs for, you know, for with air travel. And so I'm not trying to cause any kind of a panic. You're right. Every analysis I've read says the chances of it getting over here, obviously the conditions here are not conducive to an outbreak. But at the same time, when you find out somebody died in an airport and they could have been on their way to Minneapolis, I'm just saying, even while the chances aren't great, again, I think this is sort of one of those, you know, teachable moments about here we know about something ahead of time. We've just had an outbreak in a part of Africa where it had not happened either before or in a long time, a much larger outbreak than before, an outbreak in urban areas than before, the first known case where somebody got on an airplane and made it to another large city before dying. You know, it feels like, again, we don't do anything about things until they've already happened. And even if the chances aren't great, this seems to be a deadly enough disease. Usually it has a 90% mortality rate. This time right now it's at about 60%. But the people who are, you know, who are get better health care for obvious reasons would be the ones more likely to survive. I mean, it's a very deadly virus, and it's a very terrible way to die, and you would think this isn't an enormous investment of money when you consider what we spend on airplanes that don't take off.
And indeed, it's a perfect example of how neoliberalism, the idea that the market is always going to solve our problems, simply doesn't work in the context of public health, and be it global public health or domestic for that matter. And then the other irony, of course, is that this defunding is been a function of this neoliberal agenda, and certainly promulgated by the Republicans in this country. And the irony is, of course, is how much they've been trying to sort of say that these Central American kids who are coming in, I think some of them have been accused of bringing Ebola into this country.
I believe,
which of course
Bill
is not
Gingrich,
true.
Who's a Republican doctor.
And the idea that, of course, we won't do anything about the actual problem. It's only good insofar as that it's something that we can use to demonize children. And there's been attempts by the president to go down to Central America and talk with leaders in that country to sort of deal with the issues that are driving children to go on these 1,000-mile-plus journeys and hand themselves into immigration officials at the border so that they can get refugee status. And yet it now appears that we're not going to have any new funding to deal with this humanitarian crisis at the border, forcing the president to tell executive agencies, because these costs don't go away, right? I mean, these kids are real. We have statutory obligation to care for these children as they go through a due process, and which is still, I think, shabby at best.
A law that was, again, re-signed and passed under George W. Bush.
Indeed.
And supported by Republicans at that time who hadn't yet said, wait a minute, a black president's in favor of it, who's a Democrat, we'd better be opposed to it. And as you're pointing out, yet again, the Republicans, as they've done in previous situations, not such as this, but other budgetary matters, where the amount of money that we would spend on Homeland Security or we would spend on, and not the actual Homeland Security that protects us, but like a boondoggle of sorts, or the kind of money that just disappeared in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, talking about a defense budget that once you start adding everything in and Homeland Security and other things, and, you know, it was $1 trillion a year probably. And we can't find, what was it that President Obama wanted? $3.7 billion.
Yeah.
And these guys wanted to pass a bill. The far right of the Republican Party, which is led by John Boehner, wanted to pass a bill that was $659 million, which is not
right.
Even close to being up to the task. But even that was not good enough for Speaker of the House Ted Cruz, who whipped against it and got people to oppose it. So Boehner had to pull it. And I think the best description I've seen of Boehner and what he's had to do is by Charlie Pierce in Esquire, that Dan Brown, you know, Dan Brown's next book might be about the search for John Boehner's balls.
You know, apparently the House has voted, they took a procedural vote, I believe, just moments ago, and I'm not clear on how it passed, but to get a sense of whether or not they could actually pass their own bill. Now, this bill, it has a language written by Representative Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who is really sort of insane, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
it will, right. It will do certain things. It will provide only money to support governors, essentially, and their National Guard. It sends...
And you know why they're doing that, too, because you've got two Republican governors in two red states.
Indeed.
In Brewer and Perry. So yep. Let's help our friends out with a government bailout. And I don't believe that, of course, but that's what they would call it if it were anybody else but their own people. But because it's their own red state governors, that makes it okay to make sure the money, earmark the money for exactly that purpose, but none other.
It will attempt to force a reversal on the DACA, basically the Executive Action Dreamers, where the president basically told an agency, an executive agency, ICE, that to prioritize or to deprioritize people who grew up in this country and came here by no choice
and
of their
basically
own.
Basically no connection to their home country,
right.
Other than somebody, you'd be like, you know, trying to go back to the Ukraine 30 or 40 years ago, right after I was born, because my grandfather was born there. I mean, maybe that's a little more removed, but the point is that there's no, they don't have a connection. In some cases, don't even speak the language.
Right. Of course.
It's ridiculous.
And they have graduated high school, or they're serving in the military, et cetera, et cetera.
They're as American as you or I.
And
would be the answer to that.
It would also reverse that 2008 reauthorized law, thereby sending these refugee applicants back to their homes immediately. Many of whom will probably end up continuing living in massive fear, some of whom will die.
Some of the most dangerous cities in the country,
and
more
so
dangerous than some of the war zones we're in.
And good for the Democrats in the Senate who refuse to change those laws. But we will get no bill out of this, assuming the House Republicans can even pass it. But it also speaks to the notion that John Boehner, when he says we're not interested in immigration, even if we were to, I mean, immigration and impeachment, even if we were to believe him, it's quite clear that he doesn't have the ability to make that decision. He is, talk about leading from behind. This guy's not even on the same bus, never mind not driving it, as his Republican caucus. And we saw the passage of a bill which would allow the House to sue the president. It's different than we've seen in the past because we've only seen individual lawmakers sue the president, which usually get thrown out because the lawmakers lack standing. Again, you still may have the same principle, it seems to me, applies to Congress as a whole, because they cannot prove that they've been harmed, particularly in this case, by the delaying of a mandate that they wanted to delay in the first place.
I mean, that is even more ridiculous about the whole thing. I mean, it is all such a waste of time and effort. I mean, what these guys do is ridiculous enough normally, but this, the only thing they could figure out to go after him about was delaying the employer mandate, which is something they wanted him to do, and so they're suing him, but they don't have standing. Almost definitively, they're not being hurt by it, and it's just the whole thing is. I mean, again, that's the kind of bill they can pass, but when we've got a crisis on our border, or and a humanitarian crisis, when it's a problem that simply isn't going to go away. You can close your eyes. It's kind of like abstinence only. Okay, people will stop having sex. Make marijuana illegal. Yep, they'll stop smoking it. Gun violence, let's ignore it, it'll go away. The biggest one of all, perhaps, climate change. Ignore it, it'll go away. these things don't go away. These kids, by ignoring them there and not doing something about this, they're not going to just go away.
And today Morning Joe, Tom Cole, who is a Republican for Oklahoma and considered a very close ally of Bonaire's, was asked I'm not sure who it was that asked him on the panel, but yesterday when they couldn't pass the bill, Boehner basically said there are plenty of administrative things that the president can do and should be doing at the border. But this is the day after you have sued the president for taking administrative action. And Cole admitted, he said, look, you can't say on one hand that the president is overreaching by acting without legislative authority and then refuse to give him legislative authority in another area. And so, you know, it just shows how ridiculous it is. And, you know, good for the Democrats for taking finally some political advantage to this and using this stuff as, I mean, it's not as much as I would like them to see. I'd like them to have a proactive agenda, but at the very least, they're exploiting the Republican ridiculousness, you know, in hopes to raise money and drive people to the polls. I don't know if it's going to work. It's you know, it's fairly weak tea as far as these things is going, but at least they're, you know, to stretch out the analogy, brewing something.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said there. I mean, I would much rather they had a proactive agenda. You don't need a contract with America, you know, kind of goofball Frank Luntze thing. You just offer five things that are important to you. Say, these are the five measures that we're going to fight to pass between now and November, whatever, you know, and they could have done that 6 months ago. And made it very clear, we stand for the minimum wage, we stand for, you know, equality of pay for women, we stand for immigration reform. These are all good things for the economy, by the way. And when I say we stand for the minimum wage, you know, I mean raising it, not where it is. That's what the Republicans stand for, or eliminating it, in the case of Tom Tillis, I believe, from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that would be better. But even, you know, in the absence of that, maybe we're expecting too much from the Democrats. They are handling this well. You know, they are raising money off of this. They are going to make this an issue. And again, this is an election about motivating people to come out. And the way you motivate people on your side to come out is by again and again showing them what will happen if these vandals, who you've already given one house you've already handed over one house of our legislature to, and you've already handed over the Supreme Court to, also take control of the second part of our legislature, and thereby wield control of both. Impeachment will be on the table because, as you pointed out, John Boehner can't control them. So it doesn't really matter what John Boehner wants, what Ted Cruz wants, what Mike Lee wants, what Jim Inhofe wants. That's what's going to determine what happens, and their counterparts in the House, who are everybody's crazy. And, you know, there's a good article in the Daily Beast today. Was it David Freelander? I'm trying to remember who wrote it. Maybe I'm getting mixed up. But it was about, you know, and he sort of went around and looked at all the different races in which this is actually now, this has become the new litmus test in Republican primaries. If you don't say you're for impeachment, you're in trouble.
Oh, I hadn't seen that. Now let's play this out for a second, okay? I don't want to spend too much time on this. But, all right, let's presume that the Republicans take the Senate or they don't take the Senate. I'm not sure that it matters too much, right? You've got Ted Cruz.
I mean, in terms of impeaching happens in the House, convicting happens in the Senate.
Indeed. And the only dynamic there is whether or not it's a freebie for the Republicans in the Senate, right? Because if they don't control the Senate, they know that they won't be able to convict the president. Now, there is no reason to believe that at least a large portion of the Republican caucus sees any downside at all to impeachment. These are people whose seats are fairly protected, A, and B, they're not just fairly protected against a vote for impeachment. They're more protected with a vote for impeachment. And,
that's right.
And think about Ted Cruz here. All right. Ted Cruz has the ability now to go over to the Republican House and scuttle a bill that they desperately need to pass. And what's Ted Cruz's agenda in terms of impeachment? If you're Ted Cruz and you know you're running against Rand Paul and you want to make sure that you have full access to the crazies in the Republican Party. You want to prove that Rand Paul is a pretender, right? And I think Rand Paul is starting to get aware of this because he's starting to try and moderate his positions on certain things.
Right.
If I'm Ted Cruz, I want Rand Paul to have to take that impeachment vote because it does not hurt Ted Cruz one iota to vote for impeachment.
No, he's trying to stake out the territory on the far right.
And
it can only help him. You're pointing it out, and some of his lieutenants, the other guys who are there with him, if Joni Ernst gets elected, she's now said impeachment should be on the table from Iowa. She's basically Iowa's version of Ted Cruz. She'll be right there with him. You know, you'll have a good – I mean, again, think about how many of these even, you know, even in the Senate, how many of them you trust. And, yeah, they'd lose eventually, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they want to take that vote in the Senate, as you point out. And in the House, I don't see – I mean, obviously it does depend somewhat on what happens in these midterms. Maybe they lose a few seats and you get about 10 or 15 Republicans scared in their moderate-esque districts, you know, the few that are left. Maybe it barely fails in the House, but I don't see how they fail in taking that vote. Why they wouldn't take that vote? I mean, you either wouldn't do it because you thought it's going to hurt you, as you pointed out, either won't or hurt you not to take the vote because these people are in safe, crazy districts.
And we know the majority of Republicans are still for impeachment.
Right. And then, 57%, a strong majority. Or otherwise, you'd actually have to have respect for the Constitution, the process of government, and the history of this country. And they've proven they have none of that. As much as they love to fetishize the supposed constitution that doesn't exist, the one that they talk about all the time, the actual one and the actual, you know, the way this country works, they've proven they've learned nothing from when they did it to Bill Clinton and potentially occupied his time doing this, dealing with this silliness during a time when a foreign terrorist organization was targeting us. They don't care. They don't care.
You know, but here's the thing.
They don't think about anything.
I think the lesson from 98 is overblown, frankly. I mean, look, people forget Clinton still left the presidency. It may have helped Clinton's legacy on some level. But I'm not convinced that the lesson – first of all, the situation's not the same. And I don't know what the lesson – it probably hurt Gore, frankly – and help George Bush's election help. It certainly, I mean, I think that's almost undeniable.
Well, it did, because, I mean, Gore ran away from him.
And in fact,
because he was impeached.
And brought Joe Lieberman on the ticket to inoculate him from it. From that entire thing. But also, you know, you have to remember here that I don't think there's anybody in if the Republican Party cared about winning the president in 2016, in some type of general, they wouldn't be doing any of this. And
that's
they're going for the off-year
already,
elections.
It's in Ted Cruz's interest, who, if he wants to be president.
He wants to get on that debate stage and say, Senator Paul, why wouldn't you invoke? Do you really think that President Obama hasn't played fast and loose with our Constitution? Why would you vote against impeachment? I mean,
what
that's
about Benghazi and Fast and Furious? And, you know, they can go on and on.
Lois Lerner thinks that guys like Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin are a-holes? I mean, impeachment! Impeachment!
That's right. I mean, there's no loss for him because he thinks people think like he does. He clearly has, like, the emotional IQ of a child. And, you know, if he were the Republican nominee, whoever the Democratic nominee is, would probably win 48 states because even most of the Republicans, get him off the record, they'll tell you they think the guy's a complete a-hole.
Right.
Nobody likes Ted Cruz. It doesn't really matter, though. What matters is what Ted Cruz wants right now because he controls things. And in every motivation, every incentive that you've brought up, everything I can think of is for them in both the House and the Senate to attempt to impeach and to convict.
All right, let's move on because 6 months ago, Dianne Feinstein got up and gave a speech on the House, on the Senate floor, which Patrick Leahy said was probably the most important speech he had ever heard in his time in the Senate. We were on the brink of a major constitutional crisis because Dianne Feinstein had charged the CIA with spying on Senate staffers who were drawing together the Senate's report, the Senate Intelligence Committee's report, on whether or not the CIA tortured. Now, that report, we saw some leaks from it, or not some leaks, but we basically saw a shadow of what's in that report. We saw some talking points that the State Department prepared upon the release of this report, which basically make it very clear the CIA engaged in torture. So we now know that the CIA has been lying to the Senate Intelligence Committee. That's why, in fact, the CIA was spying on the Senate Intelligence Committee, because they had gotten hold of an internal CIA report that basically said, hey, we tortured people. And the day after Dianne Feinstein made this charge, John Brennan, head of the CIA, said that's just not something we would do. We would never do something like that. And now the CIA inspector general has come out and said, yeah, turns out, yeah, we did. And this is after the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice rejected the call for an investigation. And the other part of this CIA report has also stated that the counter filing by the CIA that where the CIA had claimed that they had in fact also that the Senate Intelligence Committee had stolen documents from the CIA was also rejected by the CIA's IG. So in other words, they filed a fake a claim, which they knew had no basis. And so,
right.
What the F? I mean, honestly, we've got the director of intelligence, national intelligence, lying to the Senate Intelligence Committee. We have the CIA director lying to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Udall has called for the resignation of John Brennan. I mean,
right.
This is just so effing naked at this point. Like,
there can be any case at this point for the guy staying on. I mean, it just seems every time you turn over another rock, your worst suspicions end up being true. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a, you know, when you think people, of course, have those accusations, you think, oh, maybe I'm letting my mind run on me. No. And we've seen this in the past. I mean, if you study history, you know, the church committee, you know what was done. That's why we tried to rein in some of these practices. And then every sort of generation, we loosen up again, and certainly post 9/11, and look where we end up. And now you've got it's sort of like the cover-up compounding the actual scandal itself. You know, I mean, now we've got these guys who are spying on members of the Senate, and we're still going to get this torture report. And it's still, and what's been leaked so far, of course, is terrible.
And I don't want to get Matt in trouble here, but if Matt, and he certainly doesn't have these skills, or if he is, he's hiding them. But if Matt had hacked into the Senate Intelligence Committee's computers and taken documents that they were working on, Matt would no longer be working here. At one point, we'd have had a dramatic thing that I hope we would have caught on videotape, where FBI agents would have knocked on the door, and they would have put him in cuffs. They probably would have come here with a battering ram and a SWAT team, and this guy, he would be in jail, and we wouldn't hear another peep out of Matt. And I guess, I don't know if he has any type of, one of those Google things that if you're not working your email for a long time, it sends like the, you can send out the passwords to, your Tumblr feed. And we would have had public shaming would have been a property of the Majority Report at this point. The idea that the CIA does this and all they got to do.
I'll send in the tip today.
All they got to do is go and apologize and then appoint Evan Bayh the freaking chair of an internal review committee. We don't need an internal review. We've had an internal review. It's the CIAIG report. Now it's time for the Justice Department to get involved in this. I mean, Jesus,
yeah, but you're
what can they
something.
Not get away yeah. with?
Evan Bayh is not exactly gifted with personality, and he needs something to talk about during his Fox News appearances, which he makes money of because he's a contributor there. So, you know, be sensitive to the fact that he needs to do something.
It's stunning. I mean, we wouldn't do that. I mean, that's just beyond the, you know, the scope of reason in terms of what we do. When the facts come out on this, I think a lot of people who are claiming there has been tremendous sort of spying and monitoring and hacking will be proved wrong. So either John Brennan is a liar, or actually both things can be true. He's either a liar in this specific case. I think he's a liar in general. Or the guy's so the CIA is so out of control that they will spy on the Senate, you know, just I don't know who's authorizing it at some low level. I mean, come on. This is just crazy. The guy should resign tomorrow.
The guy should have resigned. I mean, yeah, he should have resigned yesterday. He should have resigned the minute it came out. I don't understand how you get to stay on in that position at that moment anyhow. But, I mean, you know, again, when we talk about broader discussions, the broader discussion comes up that it was quite clear that he was in a position in the past to have known something about torture, and we still let him run the CIA. And there's a point where when you let all the guys when you don't look back and you let all the people that screwed Wall Street, you let all the people that screwed our national security policy and torture and black sites, which Brennan said he approved of, by the way, black sites, and some of these things, then, you know, it's almost like once you've allowed them to sort of clean themselves up and stay respectable, you've missed your chance. You know what I mean? What a shocker. A guy who approved of abrogating the Constitution. It's like all those people that were let go from Iran-Contra. What a shock that, you know, Elliot Abrams and people like that ended up in the Bush administration after they you know, and they're still writing op-eds criticizing Obama because they were allowed to be rehabilitated. Hell, Ollie North has his own TV show.
And you know, you look at this, what the stories that have broken this past week about an American citizen who went to Syria, was trained in suicide bombing, came back here, just, you know, I guess just back to Florida, family. And then went back to Syria to blow himself up. We have hundreds of thousands of people on the terror watch list. We have an unprecedented amount of spying on average Americans. Yet this guy falls through the cracks, probably because he was just some white dude. I mean, if you look at the video of this guy, it's just he just looks like a guy who's just, you know, ranting and raving like anybody else you could see on YouTube. It's just, you know, but, you know, white guy just literally seems like, a, you know, sort of just a dude, you know. And the point is that and then you got the story of Keith Alexander going out there and basically getting $1 million, maybe $500,000 per consultation with corporations protection, computer hacking protection that he somehow developed in the past 3 months that since he's left the NSA. Undoubtedly nothing, no technology, nothing that he garnered from there. I mean, you realize that this is as much a racket as anything else. And that they simply spy on people because they can. There seems to be no connection between that and efficacy. We know the story of Thomas Drake, that he got basically his life just destroyed by the U.S. That's government right. Because he was whistleblowing on another huge boondoggle that Congress ultimately shut down, but was a way for his bosses at the NSA to lard their own pockets. And so, I mean, this is just it's out of control, and there doesn't seem to be anybody who is within our government, within our legislative bodies, who are standing up and basically just saying this is enough.
Well, there's nobody out there also framing this argument, the broader argument on the left, and saying this is what happens when you deregulate. This is human nature. This is the behavior you get in government. This is what happens. This is what happens when you stop watching what the CIA is doing. What happened on Wall Street is what you get when you stop watching what they're doing. The oil spill is what you get when you stop watching what BP is doing. This is Reagan's deregulation for you, everybody, that we've been doing for 40 years. How do you like it? Is it working out well for you? Is it benefiting the country? Is it a good thing? That's what someone with courage would get up and make a large speech tying all these various strands together, because they're not isolated. They're all related. You know, they're all related. But, you know, I won't hold my breath to wait for anybody on the left to do that who's in government.
Yeah. All right. Well, Cliffy, and thus another casual Friday. Boy, that was
casual. I feel so casual now.
I know.
After that discussion, do you?
All right.
well, thank you, as always.
It's time. We got to get on to Isabel Gillies and some Dick Morris jokes to cleanse the palate. So
Cliff, Dick, as Dick Morris has said, if he saw Obama resigned, he wouldn't be surprised.
And, I know, of course.
Judging by the actual results of the past election compared to what he said was going to happen, clearly nothing surprises him.
Indeed. All right, Cliff, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, buddy. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to the wonderful Isabel Gillies, who will give me a movie review. I imagine she's very relaxed. You know how she is on the summers, those best-selling authors and their main vacations. All right, folks, we'll be back in a minute. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Casual Friday, and one of, I don't want to pick favorites, but one of my favorite guests on Casual Friday to come and give me a movie recommendation for me to watch. And like I say, I'm headed on vacation within the next couple of weeks, and so I'm going to have plenty of time, is, of course, the wonderful Isabel Gillies. But before we even get there, we have to get to the wonderful Isabel Gillies theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Now, I couldn't help but notice that Isabel's singing along. Does your family sing that to you? Do your boys sing that song to you?
They don't know it. It's very hard for me not to sing it when it's playing, and that just burst out of me.
And
I was singing it in my head, and then it just went audible.
And why do your boys not listen? Know that song?
I don't know. I guess I've not shared it with them.
So they
but
don't.
But I
listen
tried
to
play it for my friend the other day.
What do you mean you tried?
We had no internet.
Oh well, that would make it difficult unless you had downloaded a show onto your phone via the app.
But not even on the phone did I have internet.
What about your husband? He must sing it to you then.
Peter learned how to play guitar because of it.
Are you
so
serious?
He can strum it to me.
Wouldn't
that be funny?
That would be really impressive.
I know. I'd love it.
He should do that for your birthday.
I just sing it. What?
He should do that for your birthday.
He should. Or maybe we should, I don't know. I think I might have to bust it open to the kids. I never really want to expose them too much to my life.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
I don't think they've ever watched an episode of Law & Order.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, that's a little bit different. I mean, you know, you don't show them this sort of like, there's a lot of like angst in that. This is a celebration of you.
I know, and I talk about them a lot.
Yeah.
So they might as well just hear the song.
Well, Peter, at the very least,
could play this afternoon.
All right, good
enough.
They're
out.
They're out. What are they doing? Going to camp?
Yeah, they're doing their, you know, daily routine. They're sailing right now.
Yeah, Isabel is up in Maine. That's
I'm in Maine.
The
great state of Maine,
right?
Yeah, I could see my parents right now.
Wow. Well, that's
my mother turned 75 yesterday, and my father's 80, and they're like 60-year-olds because they live in Maine.
What do you mean they're like 60-year-olds because they live in Maine? You mean it's given them
it revitalized them.
Wow. Even through those
really
winters,
did.
Huh?
Sorry?
Even through the winters.
Oh, yeah. Well, my father is a selectman of the island.
Well, I had no idea.
Yeah. So he's still into politics. You know, he always is into politics.
Right.
And he was like, okay, I'll grow where I'm planted and just run for office here on an island. And
oh, my God.
Then he's the head selectman.
I just figured out what I want to do.
Retire to an island in Maine and become a selectman?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good way to go.
Hey, get your dad's pre-endorsement. So what are you doing? So when is your book coming out? It's coming out in September, right?
It's coming out September 2nd, everyone.
Wow.
September 2nd. Now, remember, you're always so generous to mention it, but I'm always like, it's so far away. It's in a month.
Wow. And so this is appropriate for...
it's almost Myla.
Okay, so for tweens, right?
Tweens.
So what does that mean?
Tweens, like, and young teens. It's because it's about falling in love, but it's romantic. It's
so,
not like
so 10, 11, dark. 12, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds?
Yes. Yes to all of the above.
And so Michael has already bought an advanced copy.
Yeah, I'm right there.
You have?
Of course. I'm putting my Bates education to work, Isabel.
Oh, come on.
Well, I don't know
Wait,
why
do you
want to
hear what
so
Kirkus said about it?
Who?
Kirkus.
Oh, what did Kirkus say about it?
I'm going to do the quote because I got a quote today from it.
We may not even have you on before the book comes out again. So this is it. This is the big plug.
Are you serious?
Well,
this is it? This is the plug?
Well, no, maybe we'll have to do it. I think we'll get in right under the radar, as it were.
Okay, ready? This is the quote. An authentic look at teen love and betrayal that will entertain and touch young readers.
Wow.
Kirkus.
I bet you Myla would like to read
home.
That. She doesn't necessarily... Wait, you want to put Thomas on?
Yeah. Okay, but you want to be on the radio for 2 seconds?
Yeah, this is high-quality
stuff.
Sam. Hello, Thomas. How are you?
Good.
How is your summer going?
Good.
Have you ever heard your mother's theme song?
No.
You want to hear it now?
Sorry?
Do you want to hear your mom's theme song right now?
I guess.
Yeah, why not? Let's hear it. You ready?
Okay.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Now, Thomas, give me your reaction to that. What does it make you think about your mom now that she has a theme song?
It's cool.
All right. That sounds about right to me. All right. Well, you should get Peter to learn that on the guitar and play it to her.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Boy, am I great with kids. Isabel, you there?
Sorry?
That was inspiring.
Thomas?
Wait.
Yeah, let's put it. Let's put your bomb back on.
Okay, wait. I have to put you back.
What?
Okay, peace.
Peace.
Wait, aren't you Hugo and Bob's Burgers?
I am, actually. That's right.
Yes.
You
give him, excited? Give him a little Hugo.
You want a little Hugo?
Sorry? Yes, please.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
There you go. Oh, wow. Yeah, this is definitely worth it.
You are good with kids, just not as Sam Cedar.
Hello, Thomas. I see you're not keeping your burger plates clean. All right. Put your mom back on. There's more of that where that came from, buddy.
See ya.
Okay. So long. Wow.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, thank you.
Hello.
Wow. What I got to say, your son was more impressed with me than he was your theme song.
I know. Well, I told you he's obsessed with Bob's Burgers.
Well, there you go. Well, you should.
What did you say at the end? Because he turned me like flushed.
I said, hello, Thomas. Get your burger shop clean. It's one of the classic Hugo lines.
And did he? Because he was like, yes. He like turned bright red.
Wow, that's great. I'm so excited. I have that power. I mean, I was once on the street with Mila when we ran into Caroline Ray, and I was talking to her. Mila was like, "Let's go, Dad." And then Caroline turned to Mila and said, "Do you watch Phineas and Ferb?" And she said, "Yes." And then she started talking like the mom because she's the mom on Phineas and Ferb. And Mila almost passed out. She was so excited.
Well, so, Phineas and Ferb is amazing. I love Phineas and Ferb.
Well,
let's sing the song to Phineas and Ferb.
No. But I think your son just had that experience with me, is my point.
He totally did because he didn't know. You know, he just came in the kitchen. I was like, here, get on the phone. And then I whispered, he's the guy from Bob's Burgers. And he was like, oh, my God, wait a minute.
There
he
you go.
He freaked out.
There you go.
That was fun. You made his day, man.
All right. I can't wait. For a while there, I was getting a little bit upset because I couldn't quite you know, I wasn't communicating well, and I've got to practice now because Saul eventually is going to learn to talk, I think. And
oh, yeah. And then he's going to be psyched that you're on Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, I think that's going to be long gone at that point. But be that as it may, Isabel, so what do we got? What do you got for us in terms
of... Okay, so this is what I figured. Okay? So
wait, do you want to make one more pitch for the book? People can go.
Oh, right.
Is it available? Yes. Pre-order on Amazon right now?
Pre-order on Amazon.
Do you want us to push it up the charts
now? September
2nd. Or do you want us to wait? What's the strategy here?
Doesn't it all go into the count? Isn't it anytime you buy it, it's good?
I don't know. You want us to push it up on the tween list now or when it comes out?
No, push it up.
All right, we'll do it.
On the day, on September 2nd, then
we'll
say
do.
Go, go, go.
Okay, yeah,
don't
there's
forget.
No point in pre-ordering it then, folks.
Well, you can if you want, I guess.
All right, well, yeah, I
mean,
I can see.
If you are willing to buy it, then yay, go ahead, do it whenever you want. But I tell you, it's a fun romance. So and it takes place in New York, and
the only people who are going to buy it are going to be people if they have, like, a niece or a daughter or, you know, their friends, Michael's
cousins.
Buying it for his cousin. So everybody pre-order the book. We'll put a link on Majority FM. What's it called?
Starry Night.
Starry Night. Wow, that sounds like a tweeny thing. All right, so let's get to...
It's because she loves the painting of Van Gogh.
Oh, well, excuse me. I didn't pick up on that. Guess maybe
no, it's a romance. It's fun.
All right.
It's fun.
What do you got?
Thank you. That was a nice plug. I'm sort of forgetting that that's all coming. This was my reasoning. You are alone in New York, right?
That's true. My wife
Nick and the kids are up in the bucolic country.
Right.
Not getting typhoid. And,
not getting typhoid. All right.
Well, I know that was a little bit of an odd reference. It's just because, like, at the turn of the century, that's what you did. Like, the men would stay in the cities, but the women and children would go up where there was no, because the summer brought all the diseases.
I had no idea, but all right, go ahead.
That's what camp is for and stuff. So I thought that maybe because you were alone, you could go to a movie in the actual theater.
Possibly, actually, that's possible. What do we got?
This is what I'm gonna give you, Chef.
What?
Chef.
Chef? What's that?
Chef. It's the Favreau movie about the guy in the food truck.
What? Never even heard of it.
Have you not heard of this?
Jon Favreau?
Jon Favreau stars in and wrote this movie called Chef. And it's about a guy who a big chef, like a famous chef, who gets sort of disenchanted with the restaurant world and starts a food truck with his 10-year-old kid. And it is awesome.
Really?
It's so good. The whole food truck thing is really just interesting and fun. But besides that, Jon Favreau is fantastic. And John Leguizamo's in it, and Sophia Villa.
But Brad Cooper's the star of it, right?
Bradley Cooper?
Isn't he?
No, Jon Favreau's the star of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that other chef film. Oh, yeah, I looked up Chef, and it's all another film. That's the only thing that you get when you get, okay, so Favreau. All right. I mean,
did you see it? Can you see it?
Yeah, I could see it. You know, I got to tell you, unlikely. If I go to a movie,
it's supposed to be good.
If I go to a movie, I'm going to go see that that one by Linkletter where he had the actors course of 8 years. I mean, that seems to me to be...
I think it's longer. I think it's 13 years or 12 years or something.
Yeah, how would I not go see that over a Jon Favreau comedy? Wah, wah.
Oh. How about Double Feature?
That is unlikely. I still got to work.
Well, no, because if you go at, let's say you go at 5.
Yeah.
You go 5 to 7, 8 to 10.
Yeah.
That's how I used to roll. That's in my 20s. I would do the Double Feature once a week for sure.
I would see you sometimes at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Downtown and be like, what are you doing? You're like, I'm going to see another movie. Another movie? Yeah, I saw 3 today already. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, you wake up. It's unbelievable.
I know.
All right, well, Chef, I mean...
It was good times. No, but I'm not kidding about Chef. It's not like... It's. I mean, maybe you're not into food, but wait, guys, help me. I'm not... giving you something weird. It's good.
I know it's not weird, but you know, Jon Favreau, I don't know. I mean,
Do you know Jon Favreau? Maybe you know him.
I know him a little bit. I mean, I once took a lot of money from him in a game of poker, but I don't know him, you know. that was years and years and years ago. I just, you know, when I think I still haven't had trouble getting over what was that movie that his first movie?
The Slingers?
Yeah. Because that came out during Who's the Caboose, and that got all the attention, and blah, blah, blah. And I think I still have some... It's only been 20 years, so I haven't really quite gotten over the residual resentment. It may take another 15.
I understand that. It's like I have that a little bit about Hope Davis.
Oh, Hope Davis is wonderful.
I know.
I did a film with Hope Davis.
I know. Well, I probably should have been in it because Hope Davis has my career.
Really? Yeah, but you know, she has
Hope Davis is a great actress, and I like her as a person. But honestly, we're so similar. And when we were both coming up in the biz, she just nailed it. Parker Posey first Parker Posey, but she was a little more wackadoodle than me. So then,
yeah, but Hope Davis is a little bit more morose than you too, which I think was what you know sort of built her career.
Her sort of solemnness.
I could tell you one of the most disturbing stories that you have heard about me that took place on that set. In fact, I was just talking to Brad Anderson about it. I saw him the other day, the guy who directed Next Stop Wonderland. And John Benjamin and I were in Next Stop Wonderland.
Wait a minute. That is the movie. Was she in it? Because that's the movie I lost out to her.
Yeah, that was it. Oh, my God. Could you have imagined, Isabel, if that's when we met? I don't think had we met at that point? Maybe. I don't know.
I think so, because we had the same manager.
Yeah, it's very possible. Oh, boy, that story, that was, there's a lot of stories there, but there's one that's really inappropriate. Which, I'll tell you the audition story was, I had gone, I was in Boston editing Who's the Caboose. And I went in to see this casting agent to see if I could get some voiceover work from her. And she said, you should come by tomorrow because I'm doing some casting for this movie. And Benjamin's already cast in it. The director's coming in, guy named Brad Anderson. And so I came back for the audition. As soon as Brad walked in, I realized I had seen him. I'd met him 2 years before, 3 years before, when he was trying to cast a movie called Darien's Gap. And he put up some thing like, come tell me a story about your, you know, your upbringing. I'm trying to do a Gen X movie and at a coffee shop. And my plan was to get him to buy me lunch because he said he might need to do multiple interviews. And so I went to this coffee shop and I told him all sorts of lies about my life to make it a little bit more interesting. Like I had fought in the Falklands or something. I don't know what it was. and it was all a total lie. And I had never seen him until he walked in for this audition. And then I had to audition with a woman who was working on the film as a crew member. The audition was ostensibly the scene that I was going to do with Hope Davis, which was supposed to be really uncomfortable. Well, that woman and I had a very brief relationship that ended at about 4 a.m. when I left her apartment and said, this can't happen again. And so that the next time I saw her was actually...
Was that the audition?
Was auditioning with her. She was reading the lines of Hope Davis. And I think the air, it was so uncomfortable in the room for all those different reasons that I think I ended up getting the part.
See, that was what was fun about being an actor, is that those crazy stories happened. There was like, it was always, you know, one step away from you know, like, oh, I knew them, and then you became friends. And Hope and I became friends in audition waiting rooms. And then it would always come down, they'd be like, oh, Hope Davis got it. So you sort of like, you know, you're friends, so you're happy for that they got it, but actually you could have gotten it, too.
Deep down,
and then
you
did. You, like, go on a date with someone. And once I there was a – do you remember that movie about the cockroach?
Yes.
Called Mark
– In New York Marvin. City, the cockroaches had taken over or something like that?
Yeah, it was like a cockroach – yeah. So I auditioned for that movie with this guy, Mark Rosenthal.
Okay.
And he was in Marvin's room on Broadway, or off Broadway. And we auditioned together, and I was really close, but I didn't get the part. But then he called the casting director and asked for my number. And she sort of gave it to him illegally. And then
That is highly
we went out for like a year.
What?
Or for 6 months or something. He called me up and said, you didn't get the part, but I want to go out to the movies with you or something. And then we dated.
Wow, that's not appropriate.
I know. Who was the casting director? It was someone fun. And it was all in that audition.
Wow.
Being an actor is fun. I always tell people not to be an actor, but it's sort of a fun
life. I dated a couple women I met in an audition. But
you did?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you helped me work on an audition for a pilot that I was testing for.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, I basically made your career. What it
no,
is
No, I
today.
Didn't get it. It was,
I know.
It was a Bob Newhart one.
That's what I'm saying. I made your career what it is today.
Yeah. That was that crazy audition for Bob. So it was a Bob Newhart show. And Bob Newhart's such a huge, famous person that he was never, ever, ever in the room until the test at CBS. So every time I would audition, everyone's yucking it up and laughing up a storm. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to get this. They're like, okay, and everybody out there, let me tell you, getting to the point where you're testing for something is far. You're like you almost have it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to get it. And then I drove to CBS, and you worked on it with me, and I drove to CBS. I was all ready. I had bought a new blue coat, and the room was packed with executives and Bob Newhart. And we started the scene, and, of course, with all the executives, everyone is hysterically laughing at Bob Newhart and not at all at me.
Yeah.
And so it completely threw me, and I panicked, and I didn't get the part.
Oh, Isabel, I could have told you that. Didn't I tell you that would happen?
Yeah, you'd think that someone would have told me because, of course, who's not going to laugh at, you know, Bob Newhart, it wasn't even, his lines weren't even funny.
No, that is the way it works. That's the way it works, Isabel. Well, someday I will tell you the story of what Benjamin and I did because Hope Davis made us come back to set because she needed something to react off, and she was literally across the street in another we were in a restaurant, and they were in a restaurant, and Brad was just like, just you and John do something to make her react. And what we did went down in it was folklore. It disturbed everyone on the set.
What did you do? Come on.
I'm not going to say. If people dig it up, I will address it someday. But not
all right, I'm gonna listen. Come on, I gotta talk to John. I want to be on Bob's Burgers once.
All right.
There's got to be some little friend of one of them. I got Moose, who you just talked to, a Bob's Burger T-shirt for his birthday.
Oh, you did? You know, I could get you stuff like that. You gotta ask me. But Isabel,
I don't want swag. I want a part, man.
All right.
I'm ready for it.
Well, I want to be a best-selling author.
Come on.
Let's see if we can make a trade.
Let's do it. I'll trade anything. That's my goal for 2014-15.
All right.
Bob's Burgers.
I'll look into it. I'll see what I can do.
All right.
Isabel, as always, a pleasure. I will not be watching Chef until it comes on to Netflix.
Watch Chef because it's totally fantastic. You leave skipping down the street with happiness.
All right. Well, I could use a little bit of that.
And go in the morning, so it's and $7.
Yeah, I can't go in the morning. I got to prepare for the show.
I know, but I'm telling the other people because you just told me you weren't going to go.
Okay. Fair enough. Isabel.
Fair enough.
We will talk before your book comes out because I really want to promote it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys so much. And that would be awesome because let's your mouth to God's ears. Let's,
yeah, I want to be able to say two-time best-selling author.
That's right. Let's get her done.
All right. Isabel, have a great rest of August.
Thank you. You guys too.
Bye.
Lots of love. Bye.
All right. We got it.
Sam, can you let Benjamin know that Michael and I would also like parts in Bob's
you
Burgers?
You got that. I'll write that down.
Yeah, we would.
Okay, let's hear it. We got a Jimmy Reef Cake song?
We do.
What's it called?
It's called Pooping Out of Your Mouth, Netanyahu.
Pooping Out of Your Mouth, Netanyahu. All right.
Netanyahu, you cruel a-hole. What you're doing in Gaza is shameful. You talk about cutting off tunnels of terror. When you kill civilians, you pretend to care. You got so much poop inside of you. You gotta let it out. You keep on pooping, pooping, pooping out of your mouth. Netanyahu, why all this killing? Israelite, why are you so willing to commit crimes like blowing up a school? Then you go deny what I say is true. You got so much poop inside of you. You got to let it out. You keep on pooping,
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 pooping.
You're pooping out of your mouth.
Netanyahu, you got the poop coming out of you, but it's not the way you're supposed to do your doo-doo.
Oh, man.
Hmm.
Touches of a little step back this week.
Yeah, I mean, I like the sentiment, but I think, you know, we could have probably gotten a little more sophisticated. You might, you know, with the pooping out of your mouth, you might want to, like, that's like a, that seems to be like a one-off in the song instead of like the theme of the song.
Yeah, I don't know if I build it around it.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
poop isn't structural.
Right. But it was on topic. So, extra credit for being on topic, in that regard.
Are we doing a freebie today?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, maybe, I don't know.
Want to go to the better half?
Yeah, let's go to the better half. We're going to go long today on the better half. So let's...
Whoops, that's the wrong song.
Folks, you can become a member of this program by going to Majority FM. Sorry, freebies. It looks like you will also miss this Dick Morris cavalcade that we will go on.
Goodbye, everyone.
Sorry, you can't be with us.
I do have an amazing new deal for you to become a member of the Majority. If you can just send me your banking information personally and privately, I'll set it all up for you. I wouldn't be surprised if Harry Reid woke up tomorrow as a transsexual, frankly.
Become a member today at Majority.fm. If you buy crap from Amazon, you got to buy it through our link, folks. MajorityReportKickback.com. No excuses. Go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the link, bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon crap through there. We get a kickback. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Coupon code MAJORITY. Get the Majority Report blend while you're there, too. Show your friends. That's a great gift to give to people you want to turn on to the show who like coffee. Give us a review on iTunes. Get the app at majorityapp.com. iOS and Android. Matt and Mike will be here on Monday. I will be back on Tuesday. See you in the better half. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM.